They look at the whole actual universe as something, as an accident, or let's say a chance, which we believe that no, there is no chance, and everything here in this universe is based on hikmah issued by God.
So you have to manage your, we can't say, wisdom, time, and energy on both sides, divinity and the materialistic one. But the question comes up this way, that in the Western world, they have focused on the mundane, materialistic, bodily, physical one, and they have been successful somehow in answering this part of the human beings. But from the other side, you spend your energy and effort and mindset on both of them. Mm-hmm. You were not successful in either of them.
So what
could
is
it
the,
be a nice?
Yeah. What is the criteria of this success?
At least answering some of the bodily, for example, needs or managing, the distribution of the world.
If this is the case, I mean, even in the ancient time, the people were more successful and even more knowledgeable, and they actually solved lots of even more difficult questions. Like, as I mentioned earlier in this series of, in one of the shows, so we have seen and witnessed, and it has been proved that corneal transplant has been actually practiced 3,500 years ago in this country, in the city of Soukhta in Kerman. So these are not a good sign to say that, okay, they are more successful or we are badly, behind the...
The thing is, Hachi, I think just so we don't drift off the topic, we have no issue with the West,
yes,
or anybody.
No.
Like, for example, developing things...
No, answer the question, sir.
For the human being.
Let's not be interrupted by, side questions. Let's go to the...
This is my question,
Yeah, so I was saying anyone... So, for example, if the West advances, for example, medicine, where's the harm in that? Actually, on the contrary, Islam says seek knowledge until the from the cradle to the grave.
Okay.
So we... As a human being, we've been told to seek advances. But when it comes to humanitarian studies, that's a different field, because this usually deals with the mind and with the soul. And that's what they got it wrong.
Look, the question is, why they, by their, unique look at the human being as, for example, one aspect of him that is a material aspect of human, why are they that successful? And we as Muslims, for example, looking at both sides of human, we are not that successful. I'm answering the brother. So what is the criteria of being successful? He says that, for example, they are really successful, in different aspects of sciences and knowledges.
So it's a matter of comparison, why the Muslim world is not successful, why the Western is successful.
This is the question.
If that's
the
question.
So your answer was not that related to the topic.
Yeah, all right. So I think why Islam is not successful, it's got nothing to do with the Muslim, because we as Muslims at the Golden Age, which now they call the Dark Ages, if you go to the universities in the West,
They
refer to Islam as the Middle Age or the Dark Age, where in fact should be called the Golden Age, because most of the advances, most of the discoveries, most of the things that we have today, they stem back from, like I said, you mentioned
Ibn Haytham.
We wouldn't have the cameras today if it wasn't for Ibn Haytham.
Yeah, optics.
You are
right?
Not about
optics.
To enter the same boat.
Yeah, so that's what I'm trying to say to you. So I'm agreeing with you here. I'm not going against it. So we're saying we're not successful because the West, they tried their best to make sure that Muslims are not successful,
and to make the best out of the Islamic resources.
Yeah,
you know,
so what they did is that they gave us their culture, which is a very corrupt culture. They said, you know what, guys, go to McDonald's. We'll give you McDonald's. We'll give you KFC. We'll give you Hungry Jacks. We give you TV shows. We give you Netflix. We give you all these things. You guys stay busy while we do the work.
And then
you have to come to us and we'll sell you back what we discovered.
I don't know if you have seen the book Al-Awa'il. It is written by an Arab author that he collected the stem and the root of all the sciences in the world. Yes. This person have done a great job.
Mm-hmm.
That's very interesting that
That's
he
right.
said the root and the, let's say, discoverer of every aspect of science and knowledge in the world were Muslims. When, as the at the Dark Ages, for example, they deprive Muslims from their own sources and they actually colonize them. So this is the natural outcome of it, to say that. So this is not not a progress. This is, I think, is a regress. Yeah. Regression than progress.
Of course. This is what Professor Edward Said in his outstanding work, Orientalism, has discussed. The picture that the West made out of the Arabs, and the Islamic lands, you know, the man of the sword and this, you know,
yeah,
the womanizers, you know, and the pictures have been believed somehow by the Arab countries themselves, and they, the overconfidence that they had over the Western world in order to progress and different and develop in different fields of studies, you know, have been a trend among them, forgetting the precious treasures of the knowledge and the studies that they have in the 7th and the 8th century, for example, in the Darul Hikmah of Baghdad, or, you know, in Gondishapur, in Ahwaz University, you know. And
so, even now, if the West moves its hand from the Muslim world,
yes,
I guarantee you're going to give so much back to the world. Yeah. Now, I don't know, in Iraq this was happening, in Iran it's happening, in other countries it's happening. Mm. Whenever there's an outstanding scientist, he gets assassinated, he gets killed.
Yeah.
Now, how am I supposed to succeed when all my scientists have been killed? Look, I remember in Iraq, time of Saddam, we had so much amazing people that came with amazing inventions, and Saddam had to kill them all.
Yeah.
And when the Americans came, the first thing they did through when they invaded Iraq in the Gulf War, in the 2003 when they invaded Iraq, the first thing they did, they had a long list of scientists. They killed them all.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how do you expect any of the Muslim world to succeed when you guys are killing our scientists?
That's right.
Because you won't accept it, you know?
Okay.
So.
That's right. Okay. You know, this is really a major question, that how long should we keep consuming others' production in science, you know? This is a major question, you know? If at least Muslims believe in the famous tradition that acquire knowledge from cradle to grave, okay, they have to go on, they have to continue the studies. Of course, acquiring science from the others, we do not oppose that, but I think
we
that
can create our own.
We have to create our own based on our own system of values, and in this way, I think we are not the mere imitators of the others' knowledge and the humanities and the other world. Inshallah. Thank you much, Brother Ali and Sayyid Abdullah, for your presence in the program Viewpoints, and thank you much, dear listeners, for listening to us. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com for the session Call of Islam page. Also, our YouTube channel and Instagram page, Call of Islam Radio. To another episode, God bless you. Fi amanullah.
The same when I'm too concerned by what they say. Why should I when I have you? To doubt you would be the worst mistake. Deep inside I know that amidst all the darkness and everything which makes no sense, I know that you exist. Guides me through my darkest nights, shows me right from wrong, a world that often lies. Cause I don't need anyone, anything in life but you. No, I don't need anyone to show me my way. No, I don't need anyone but you.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
وسيم النار والجنة وسي المصطفى. The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing sermons, letters, and sayings of Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahj al-Balagha. And we are having a topic-wise discussion, and we've chosen the topic of the Charter of Islamic Governance, as we've been discussing in the previous session on this same topic. We are taking our inspiration from the sermon number 87, from Nahj al-Balagha. So we have been taking guidance from different sermons. At the moment, we are taking our guidance from this sermon, which has some important statements regarding the situation of the Muslims before the coming of Islam, rather the situation of the world in general before Islam arrived, before Islam arrived in that area. And in the world in general, Imam Ali alayhi salam says that one of the situations at that time was that zahiratul ghurur. He says that the world was manifesting a form of deception. The world was deceptive, and yes, the world is deceptive even today. And the main reason why the world was deceptive was because in the world lacked that light of divine guidance. The world was empty from the divine teachings that were supposed to guide and control and, you know, govern the affairs of the Muslims and of the people of the world. And that is why the world takes this deceptive form.
You are listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Now, you will notice that this deceptive form is then taken by these, is then kind of, manifested by the evil people, by the oppressive people of the world also. Those who kind of stand at the helm of these material movements, like capitalism, imperialism, you know, like all of these different types of ideologies that kind of take, that kind of give more importance to the material dimension and zoom and focus on the material dimension only. And if any spirituality is talked about, it's spoken for a material benefit. These types of discussions, these types of, you can say, ideologies are the actual cause of misguidance from the path of truth. Now, you notice that these same people are then the most deceptive of people. And you can see the deception. You can see the deception that with those who claim, for example, to say words, beautiful words like human rights. Everyone who hears human rights or women's rights or animal rights or care for the environment, care for the earth, all of these things make a person feel good. These are all feel-good words, but they are just empty words. The same countries that propagate these things, they are the most, you can say, ravenous in destroying these same principles. Those who say big words like democracy, big words like human rights and right to live, equality, they are the ones who are stepping down equality today. The biggest racist countries in the world are these same countries. Racism is rampant in those countries, right? America, for example, and Israel. You can see today in the world, Israel is kind of the illegitimate American child is actually trying to show that in the Middle East, trying to be that kind of mouthpiece of America, showing that we are the democracies, we are technologically advanced, and we are this and we are that. But the truth and the core of these things are that what you can see when in their practical life, how they trample the rights of the Palestinians people, the Palestinian people, how they kill the children, how they, you know, break people's houses, how they destroy the lives of people. On the other hand, they show as if they are people who love human rights and respect humanity.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
So we notice there are these people who are deceptive, that actually are the product of this deviation from God and the product of a system where God is absent. When we say that the world which is absent of God's commandments, of God's guidance, that world becomes deceptive, and the people who grow up in this world also become deceptive people. Zahiratul ghurur. You saw, for example, the wars that America waged on the Middle East. All of them were with the excuse of fighting dictatorship, fighting, let's say, lack of democracy, bringing human rights, saving people from being trampled. These were the slogans, but these were empty slogans. These were fake slogans. These were hypocritical slogans. We can see them today. Nothing to hide. We can see it. Never will a country go and kill. Never will these worldly people go and kill, massacre millions of people by saying that we are going to kill and oppress. They will never say we are oppressors. They will always deceive people to make themselves look as good as people who are, saving humanity. So this whole idea of being saviors has been a long policy from the very beginning of the world, where and those oppressive leaders and rulers would feel like they want to save communities, but the actual intention was to oppress them, to make their statements be the highest statements, to kind of get to the worldly dimension of things and enjoy the world in the best way possible. This is Zahiratul Ghurur. These are the entities. And as I said, we are living in that realm where we can see this deception and hypocrisy. We can witness it day and night. We are live audiences that are seeing this spectacle. We are live audiences that are witnessing this scenario and unfolding in front of us. And how clear are the words of Imam Ali today, telling us these things. Let us pray to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that He saves us from the deception of the world and the deception of the worldly people. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome, on the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio. سيد فاز من ولاه
وبالكتاب مسدد والنور معنا باب العلوم ومرشد هو آيات الله من ناداه أو لبه حين دعاه نال منه هو في الشدائد مجيد والفضل يمنى هو في المحاسن أحمد والوحي ربا.
Economic Divide.
Tax evasion has become a norm for the rich, the wealthy, the CEOs, and the political figures. But why does this keep occurring? The world is boasting of a new tax scheme, a reform introduced by the U.S. Yet many of these evaders are from the U.S., using U.S. soil for tax evasion. Hi, I'm Kavit Ahle, and today's program will tell you everything you ever wanted to know about tax evasion and tax dodging. Coming up in today's program, tax evasion, what is it? Offshore tax havens? And the money, how does it end up there? Complex and loosely regulated tax system is the issue. Then, the U.S. increasingly becoming a center for tax evasion. We could also mention the U.K. They promise protection of the assets of millionaires and billionaires through trust companies. And then we're going to take a look at something that is not really talked about when it comes to tax evasion, the ones that are being robbed of their rights, money that can go for rebuilding societies and communities, the money being robbed from Main Street and ordinary people. We'll give you some shocking examples.
Tax evasion. It's been around for a long time. There are laws meant to avoid the evasion, yet the practice continues. One group of countries stands out when it comes to tax evasion, the OECD, Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, represents 38 mostly wealthy Western governments, like the U.S. and the U.K., claims it has spent much of the last decade attempting to get agreements on rules that prevent tax evasion by wealthy individuals and major corporations. But the stats speak otherwise. OECD countries were responsible for 39% of the world's corporate tax abuse risks. But the U.K. clearly stands out. Some of the territories in the U.K., like Jersey, Guernsey, and the Isle of Man, were responsible for 29% of the world's corporate tax abuse risks. The failure of combating tax evasion is evidence when countries graded by the OECD as not harmful are responsible for 98% of the world's corporate tax abuse risks. So bad is the failure of preventing tax evasion that it has been recommended that the U.N. should take over the role of enforcing global tax rules.
In order to get an idea about the world of not paying taxes, it is necessary to make a differentiation here about what is legal and what is not. Now, tax avoidance is the use of legal methods to modify a corporation's financial situation to lower the amount of income tax liability. Tax evasion is the use of illegal methods to modify an individual or corporation's financial situation to lower the amount of income tax liability. Now, some examples of tax avoidance: giving to charity, investing in an individual retirement account, taking a child tax credit, and taking mortgage and tax deductions are some examples. Now, one way of tax avoidance is the use of what's called tax havens. A tax haven is a foreign country or corporation used to avoid or reduce income taxes, especially by investors from another country. There's also what's called an offshore deferral, the ability of multinational companies to avoid paying taxes on overseas profits through a potentially infinite delay of returning those profits to the U.S. Let's try to get an idea about all of this. We have our guest, Stavros Mavroidis, who's a Greek economist, works in the tradition of political economy, joining us. He's a professor of political economy at the Department of Social Policy of Pantheon University and was previously professor of political economy at the Department of Economics of the University of Macedonia. Stavros, welcome. Looking at the rich and powerful politicians, et cetera, people who obviously make a lot of money, corporations to people, they are using the U.S. As a tax destination of choice. Why has the U.S. And its states like South Dakota, Nevada, et cetera, become the tax destination of choice for people who want to hide their income or not pay taxes?
Well, let me try to clarify this point, this issue. The first, we have to bear in mind that the capitalist class, particularly in the West, and its political representatives are forfeiting the very rules they themselves set. Second, there is a long-run fusion between capitalists in the West and their political representatives. That is, the latter become capitalists and active capitalists become politicians. And of course, both of them perform the same illegal or semi-illegal practices. Now, coming to your question, the Anglo-Saxon countries, that is, the U.S. basically, but using the U.K. as a front in most of these operations.
All right. It's interesting how Stavros talks about semi-legal practices. Well, let's break down what Stavros actually said there, which is true in almost all countries, and we're going to focus on the U.S. here. Now, many wealthy Americans and billionaires actually donate money to politicians who favor government policies who are friendly to their business interests. And what do they get in return? Well, they get low taxes and less regulation. That's really important for businesses or for their business. So we're going to go back to Stavros and ask him about that. Stavros, what do you think? Many countries, again, using their money and storing them in offshore accounts.
So the Anglo-Saxon countries are facilitated in this by their dominance on the global financial system. Dollar is the main reserve currency, followed by euro.
This is our Info News section where we take a look at what's shaking and moving in the financial and economic world. Our first look is at what's called the FATF, the Financial Action Task Force. Now, this headline read, has the FATF actually become a weapon of coercion for the West? Why would that be referenced here? Well, because it concerns Turkey. Turkey is now included in the list of gray countries from the FATF, which poses the question then, is FATF impartial? Key question there. Moving on to our next topic that we chose, and that's hyperinflation. The Twitter CEO, actually Jack Dorsey, has issued what's been described as a cryptic warning that hyperinflation will soon happen in the United States. He said that it is going to change everything, that hyperinflation is very high and typically accelerating inflation, and it quickly erodes the real value of the local currency. Only time will tell. At this point, I think we're in that. And as I explained, this erosion of the real value of the local currency is where the focus is going to be. Moving on next to U.S. Recession, actually, many economists are saying that there is a recession in the U.S. already. There are worries about goods shortages, the labor market, and coronavirus, which has actually worsened dramatically. So at this point, these factors are playing into the fact that many are concluding that there's a recession in the U.S. already. Next topic, China's economy. We're looking at it somewhat stumbling. And that's a big worry, because if China's economy keeps stumbling, it won't just take down Beijing. The whole world will collapse with it. So obviously a huge concern. The Chinese President Xi Jinping has said that in order for that not to happen, he needs to strike a delicate balance between eliminating China's crushing debt and then maintaining consumer confidence. So a misstep could spur global chaos, both economic and political.
You're listening to Economic Divide. This series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
In this in-depth section, we have zoomed in on the United States and how it has become a tax evasion destination of choice. This comes from a country that has long condemned and actually jailed people who have committed this crime. First, let's take a look at the extent of U.S. involvement. In terms of the number of companies that are involved here, called trust, you have about 205 of them, which are holding combined assets which are worth more than $1 billion. That's the amount or the value that they are holding. This includes nearly 30 trusts that are holding these assets linked to people or companies accused either of fraud, bribery, or human rights abuses. Now, the immediate question that arises here, aren't U.S. authorities, like the U.S. Justice Department and the likes, aware that this is going on? And this is where the situation actually gets interesting. Let's take a look at the trust industry as a whole. Now, I mentioned a trust company. Trust company is part of the trust industry, which functions by sheltering assets and by promising levels of protection and secrecy that rival or surpass those offered in overseas tax havens. This shield is near absolute. That means it has protected the industry from oversight and has allowed U.S. states to become destinations to hide money. Now, so far, the states that are luring in wealth, here's a map of the United States. Let's take a look at what those states are. In this case in point, there are five of them: Alaska, Delaware, Nevada, and New Hampshire. But South Dakota, that one right there, that's the one that has become the favorite. It is proud, actually, to have assets from, believe it or not, 54 countries. These are clients from 54 countries in terms of assets. And then you have $360 million, which is the amount that they're holding. That has quadrupled over the past decade. One of the largest trust companies in the state, the South Dakota Trust Company. But why South Dakota? Now, this really goes back to a man by the name of Jonathan Blattmacher. He's the one right over here, okay? He's a lawyer, and he's the U.S., what's been called, or how he's been described, the U.S. tax evasion specialist. He's the brainchild behind insulating the assets of trust from taxes and creditors. Okay, so how did trust companies then get away with this? This is really the key question here. Well, year after year, this is what happens. These trusts would pitch legislative proposals, which then, with little opposition, the state legislators would turn the proposals into laws, which in turn protected the trust from creditors, from taxing authorities, from foreign governments. Then the trust, one of the things that it actually, the laws have done is it would protect the claims of future creditors, as you can see over here. So you can see how far-reaching this proposal by the legislators, which turned into law, goes. So let's fast forward to today. The greatest irony of it all, then, is when it is the U.S. that has proposed a system of so-called reforms so that people and corporations pay their fair share of taxes. And this is while the U.S. itself is a source for not paying taxes.
That global minimum tax would end the race to the bottom in corporate taxation and ensure fairness for the middle class and working people in the U.S. and around the world.
All right, joining us to give us an idea behind why this tax evasion phenomenon has accelerated in the United States is Michael Harris. He's the financial editor of Veterans Today. He's also a podcast radio show host of The Short End of the Stick. He's been in the manufacturing, financial, and technology sectors for 30 years. Mike, welcome. The U.S. becoming the largest tax haven. Tell us how these states within the U.S., like South Dakota, for example, are getting away with it. You have these secrecy laws that have been enacted, and basically more and more over the years, the U.S. to have become the tax evasion destination of choice.
Well, in the USA, we've seen a long-term influence of organized crime in our government. This is pretty widespread. We see it in our corrupt judiciary. We see it in our bought and paid for, bribed congressmen and senators. We see it virtually every aspect where the U.S. has lost its moral compass. And now the U.S. has turned itself into a country that is for sale to the highest bidder. So when you have the changes in these tax laws, they're merely doing what is asked of them by the drug cartels and by the people who are involved in human trafficking, arms merchants, all sorts of illicit sex trafficking, things along these lines. These are the people who are making the money. The U.S. Gutted itself industrially by under Bill Clinton by signing these treaties, NAFTA, GATT, led China into the WTO. So a lot of this is driven by the fact that people still want money, they still need money to live, and so they're going along by tolerating this organized crime because that's the way to make a living now. I mean, the average guy on the street has a hard time. There aren't any high-paying middle-class jobs anymore. They've all been exported to China.
All right, time to take a look at what's being said on social media about tax evasion. And it had one surprise, which is consistent with recent findings of numerous reports, which indicated that the U.S., as we have said, has become this destination of choice for tax evasions. All right, this tweet, for example, if the EU and the OECD are serious about tackling international money laundering and tax evasion, then the U.S. must be addressed. Obviously, the point that we're trying to make here. And this tweet was worth looking at also. It says, I'm not interested in hearing what we can or cannot pay for when the top 1% evade $163 billion in taxes every year. Okay, well, let's do a facts check. According to the IRS chief in the U.S., tax cheats actually cost the U.S. $1 trillion per year. Now, he said the so-called tax gap has surged in the last decade. The last official estimate from the IRS was that an average of $441 billion per year went unpaid from the years 2011 to 2013. And most of the unpaid taxes are the result of evasion by the wealthy and large corporations. Let's see what is being said about tax evasion in Europe. Now, we looked at the UK for our search here, and this is what we came up with. This person says that foreign assets held are a majority in the UK. And then Ireland, in third place, comes Cayman Islands, which is used as shell company for tax evasion, Australia, and then number five is Brazil. This viewer makes a case and point about the real reason why the UK has actually left the EU, and it's because of the new tax evasion law. The viewer blames Tory greed, their reluctance to tax themselves, and the wealthy. And it says that it's endangering the people of the UK as a result. When it comes to you, if you would like to share a story with us, please let us know. While you're at it, please drop us a line and tell us how we're doing so we can actually improve the program. And now it's time to find out more about tax evasion from Mahdi.
Hey, Kaveh. Thank you. Well, tax and financial systems are powerful tools that are supposed to create a just society. Tax revenues should be spent on improving people's lives. Give equal weight to the needs of everyone, but unfortunately, it's not.
The financial centers of the world, like the US, Europe, leaders are able to funnel and siphon money away and hide it in these jurisdictions through the use of anonymous companies.
Under pressure from corporate giants and the super rich, governments have created systems that prioritize wealthiest over everyone else. How have they done that? Financial secrecy, tax havens embedded into the global economy. What happens as a result? Inequality and corruption is created, resulting in a corrupt system that undermines democracy. Before we actually dive into the subject at hand, let me ask a question. Are authorities aware of tax evasion? Sure they are. Here's the IMF on that matter.
It is a big concern that we have a large amount of tax shifting, tax avoidance, countries sending money to tax havens, and that's reducing the tax base from which governments can collect revenues and do the necessary social and economic spending that's required.
So, there's your answer. Yet, the game goes on. Banks are also guilty of helping the corporations and the wealthy dodge taxes, like in the case of HSBC.
I'd like to put on the record an apology from both myself and from Douglas for the unacceptable events that took place at our private bank in Switzerland.
Well, just to be clear, what are you apologising for?
The lack of controls and the practices which now, judged with the benefit of hindsight, we would not be at all comfortable with if they were happening today.
The amount of money that the world misses out on tax evasion is shocking. One source, Tax Justice Network, reported that countries are losing a total of over $427 billion in tax each year to international corporate tax abuse and private tax evasion. But a closer look at the report reveals that the numbers are even higher. Multinational corporations paid billions of dollars less in tax by shifting $1.38 trillion worth of profit out of the countries where they were placed into tax havens. Corporate tax rates either were low or didn't exist there. They placed a total of $10 trillion in financial assets offshore. When it comes down to it, rich countries are responsible for almost all global tax losses. Which countries, you ask? Well, we covered that earlier in the program, but it is worth mentioning again. British territory Cayman is responsible for 16.5% of global tax losses. That's equal to over $70 billion. The UK accounts for 10%. That is over $42 billion. The Netherlands, 8.5%, which is over $36 billion. Luxembourg, 6.5%. That's over $27 billion. And finally, the US, 5.53%, which is over $23 billion. We have used the Tax Justice Network as a source for some of our data, and we felt it's necessary to relay the sentiment of Alex Cobham, chief executive of the Tax Justice Network. He said, a global tax system that loses over $427 billion a year is not a broken system. It's a system programmed to fail. Our governments have programmed the global tax system to prioritize the desires of the wealthiest corporations and individuals over the needs of everybody else. Wouldn't it be great if we can get a politician to be confronted with tax evasion questions? This was the case with Iceland's former prime minister. Pay close attention to how he breaks down after tax documents showed he and his wife used an offshore firm to allegedly hide million-dollar investments.
Have you or did you have any connections yourself to an offshore company?
Myself? No. Well, the Icelandic companies, what's it called? The it's an unusual question for for an Icelandic politician to get. It's almost like being accused of something. But I have never hidden any of my assets.
Mr. Prime Minister, what can you tell me about a company called Vintris?
Well, it's a company, if I recall correctly, which is associated with one of the companies that I was on a board of. So now I'm starting to feel a bit strange about these questions, because it's like you are accusing me of something.
So what do you think? Guilty? Not guilty? You be the judge. But in case you don't understand the gravity of the situation, the following clip may jolt you in seeing what tax evasion is all about.
The reality is not what you believe, that your prime minister has the power to decide on the future of your country. The power is hidden here.
So when the UK Chancellor of the Exchequer, Rishi Sunak, comes out and says the UK is committed to a global minimum corporate tax of at least 15%, rallying behind a US-backed plan, it should be taken with a grain of salt.
What this deal does is ensure that with a minimum rate of tax that we can make sure there's a level playing field for countries and companies wherever they're operating, ensuring that they pay the right tax in the right places at the right time.
Please write to us and let us know what you think about the program. Any questions and comments are welcome. The following are our links and addresses. From me, Mahdi, it's goodbye until next week.
Tax evasion, which is different than tax avoidance, we need to make sure that that is clear to you. It's going to persist. Why? Because the law allows it to do so. It's as simple as that. But what is the downside of this? Well, it's how the rich and the corporations, how they're getting away with it and becoming richer as a result. Now, they're doing that at the expense of their citizens. Money that they're avoiding, well, it could go for things like infrastructure, for schools, for hospitals, and things of that nature in general. And in this age of COVID-19, where every penny counts, tax evaders need to be stopped. Of course, that's a huge challenge. Well, that does it for this edition of Economic Divide. It was great having you on board, and we do look forward to any comments or questions that you may have. For now, it's goodbye from me, Kavit Tafwai. I'm looking forward to seeing you next time.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, I'm your host Musa Al-Bahalili, and you are now listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. In this program, we discuss issues, questions, and other relevant circumstances or topics parents have regarding the Islamic upbringing of their children. As usual, all of the answers are based upon the Holy Quran and the narrations of the household of the Prophet, and of course of the Prophet himself, peace be upon them all. Joining us in our studio is our guest speaker and dear friend, Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musa, who is an Islamic researcher at the Seminary of Qum. Dear Sayyid, I welcome you, and assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us, dear Sayyid. Our topic today is how a parent can become an outstanding and excellent parent, the best parent a parent can be. Dear Sayyid, please teach us.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir la'in ar-rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad wa ajjal faraja. In the age of technology and the current situation that we're in, and pretty much in every science, in every field, in every business, and everything that you want to do,
right?
You would, if you want to do a project, for example, you first thing you do, you get a pen and paper, and you lay out a plan, and you set the rules, you set the tools, you set the things needs to be set in order for you to have this working out. For example, if you want to build a building or a house, you'd have a blueprint before right. anything else. So you design the house on paper and pen and paper. You lay the foundation. You look at your rooms. You put all the things that are required, once that's done, once that's measured, and then you move on to the next step by finding builders, finding the material, right. and so on and so forth. And if you do it all correctly, you might end up with a beautiful, nice house.
Right.
So the foundation to everything in this life currently, it starts with the foundation of a pen and paper and trying to set a plan forward. Now, the first feature in a parent who wants to be distinguished, who wants to be outstanding, who wants to stand out from the rest, as the parent that sits with himself or with his partner beforehand and says to himself, what is my goal from trying to upbring my children?
Okay. Right.
So you set the goals of trying to bring a child to the world. You set the goals of you trying to upbring the child. And you lay down your tools. You lay down your methods of how you would deal with this case and how you go on about dealing with it.
So you lay down the groundwork and you get all your preparations in order before you even start.
Exactly. So I've seen this in the West happens a lot. Where women before, for example, before they get pregnant, or like once they get pregnant, they start reading books about,
parenting. You know,
titles, for example, that comes to my mind, What to Expect During Pregnancy.
Oh, right, right.
Right. So a woman who is just getting pregnant, she would know exactly what is going to happen to her, all right? How to deal with your child during pregnancy, how to speak to your child during pregnancy. So these women, they start educating themselves up front, right? So they have an education. And then a lot of parents would read books of what to expect when you have a child. Right. So they are educated. So they have an idea, they have an image, they have something in their mind before they start.
And on that note, we will go on a quick break.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners, to the program Islamic Upbringing. So today we're discussing how a parent can be the best possible parent they can be. Dear Sayyid, please continue the discussion.
So we said that a successful, outstanding parent is the one that has a goal from the beginning, that set his limitation, that sets, you know, realistic, achievable goals with achievable means. So you see that this happens in the West a lot. Sadly, it doesn't happen in our societies, in our the Muslim communities. Even before they're born, I don't know if you've seen this, they have gender reveal parties.
Yes. Right.
They, you know, they design the room of the child. Even sometimes when they go, they want to buy a house, even though they haven't got a child yet, like, okay, what would the child room be?
Right.
Right? So they're thinking constantly ahead.
Right.
Such parents who think ahead, who put a plan, who have a goal in mind, those are the parents who will be successful, who would be outstanding in their upbringing their children. And their children, obviously, will be successful as well. So, for example, a person, for example, sits down and says, okay, you know what? I want my child to be the world champion in karate, for example.
Right.
Right. I want my child to be, for example, a dentist, or I want my child to be a doctor, or I want my child to be a programmer, or what have you. And this father would sit and designs the life of the child and how he is going to make sure that the child achieve this goal, for example. So he would design his room in a certain way. He would make him watch certain things. He would teach him certain things. And he would constantly put his effort in trying to apply is a plan to make sure that the child reaches that goal.
Right.
I think it was Freud, if I can remember correctly, he says, give me a bunch of children and I'll turn them into doctors. So it is how you upbring them, how you educate them from the beginning that makes a difference. But that itself requires a person or requires a parent or an educator to have a plan prior. Any project that begins without a goal, begins without a plan, it will fail 100%.
Right, it's doomed to
fail. If it continues being weak and shaky.
Right.
We don't have anything that started just out of that, like that. Everything begins with a plan. Even Islam itself as a religion, for example, when the Prophet ﷺ started, you know, it was a secret for a number of years. It was a secret da'wah invitation where the Prophet would choose his men correctly. He chooses his men wisely. He would teach them, educate them.
Laying the foundation.
It laid the foundation. And slowly, slowly, when it was time for him to go out, he had the backbone. He had the foundation laid out. So with everything that you want to achieve in life, that makes it a vital for a person or a parent to be successful that they do this mapping or right. this blueprint of how they want to deal with the children or how they want the child to be. So it's extremely important if in order for you to be successful to have that in your mind.
And on that note, they'll say it, we'll go on a quick break.
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات.
The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam said, "A righteous child is indeed a flower from the flowers of paradise."
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات.
Welcome back to your listeners. You are listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. Just before going on a break, we were talking about how important it is to lay down the foundation for the upbringing of the children even before we think about bringing children into this world. Dear Sayyid, please enlighten us even further.
So first we said in order for you to be an outstanding parent and excel compared to the rest of the parents, is the fact that you have to have a plan.
Right.
Another thing that you need to have in order for you to be a parent, an outstanding parent, and an distinguished parent among the rest, is that you need to understand your priorities at each time and each stage of the child's life. You need to know priorities. For example, as a parent, you need to know the priority between buying your kids a book or buying them a meal, right? So sometimes, like, you know what, let me take them out, let him go to McDonald's, have a happy meal, enjoy our day, have an ice cream. Where if you would have spent, for example, that time that you took him out to a meal, you could take him to a library to buy them books, maybe that would be a lot better. So knowing the priorities. Now, sometimes that taking them for a meal could be better depending on the time and the stage of their life, right? Or, for example, a parent who sits with his kids for a few minutes and talks with them and debates with them and I don't know, like having that conversation with them, maybe it's much better than them having to go with their friends, for example, or watching TV, for example. And so understanding your priority and what to do, when to do it, is extremely important. Right. Because sometimes, as parents, we don't give that attention. We just go with the flow. Whatever happens at the moment, happens at the moment. And now that's just a ship that just goes, floats around in an ocean.
Right.
It has no destination. It just floats. So when there are no priorities in life, when you do not prioritize the time of your children and the circumstances of your children and what to do, and when to do it, you're going to have a problem. But if you look at all the successful parents, they have designated specific times for specific things. And I've seen this with a lot of parents, right. For example. Sometimes I go to a parent's house, or sometimes I call, I'm like, I want to come over. They're like, okay, if you want to come, please make sure you come before 8, because 8 o'clock the children go to sleep and everything shuts down.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So they have a priority. The sleep of a child is a priority. His education is a priority to having fun and spending fun and staying up all night. Well, some parents, they don't care. If the child, they stays all the way to 12, 1 o'clock, it's okay. They don't care because they have no priority. And so, same thing when it comes to food. Parents, for example, they have strict meals for their kids. There are no soft drinks on the meal. Chocolate is limited. Sweets are limited. It's a priority for them because the health of the child is a priority.
Right.
And so on and so forth. So those who set priorities, you see their kids very nice, very good, very behaved, very well-mannered.
Well-balanced.
Very well-balanced, very well-natured. Right. Why? because the parent has a priority. So in order for you to be a successful parent, you need to know your priorities.
Dear Sayyid, I thank you for providing us with valuable information. I also thank the dear listeners for tuning in. Dear listeners, if you have any questions, comments, or just some feedback, please